Hey, Michigan, let's talk golf. Here's Mike Sullivan, the most inconsistent golfer ever.
In your life, have you seen anything like that?
And Kyle Bogey, wait, how can a guy with that name host a golf show? We'll never know.
Better than most.
It's the Metro Detroit Golfers Podcast.
Powered by our presenting partner, Hall Financial.
Here we are, episode 4 of the Metro Detroit Golfers Podcast with our presenting partner, Hall Financial, of course, leading the way. Kyle Bogey, Mike Sullivan. Sully, before we get started here, okay, just give me 1 second. I need to chug a protein shake, okay? I'm going to do my best Bryson DeChambeau impression for episode 4. What an unbelievable performance by Bryson to run away, literally, from Matthew Wolff and the rest of the field and close out his first major championship.
Yeah, it was, man, and it really wasn't even close. I like the milkshake reference. We know that he's just a different guy, but yeah, to be 6 under like he was, to really just take that tournament the last day, and as we said, totally separate himself from the field, I thought it was great. And honestly, I'm a Bryson guy. I like Bryson. I know he's a very polarizing figure.
Yeah, see, but why are you saying it like that? It's almost as if I'm not going to accept that you like him.
Because it's almost like I should be ashamed. If you like Bryson, you should be ashamed because everyone seems to hate him. Everyone seems to just hate Bryson, which I don't really understand, to be honest with you. I don't understand all the hate that Bryson gets. I think that there's some antics that he's had in the past, even here in Detroit, about the camera guy, that type of thing. But I mean, Kyle, it really seems to me like there is just this hate for him.
Yeah, to me, I don't know that it's necessarily hate. I just think he's so different. You know, when he is when he's out there talking about how he wants to just change the game, and not just change the game of golf, but change the game of life and live till the age of 130. You know, you look at the guy and you go, who is this?
Like, do you like what is he doing? You a fan of him or not?
I am. I mean, I don't. Okay, let me rephrase that. I don't know that I'm a fan necessarily, but I don't dislike him. You know, he's going about things in a very different way, and he is bucking the trend of people who go out there on a golf course and say, "No, well, you need to practice course management, okay? You know, you need to go out there and maybe hit some irons off the tee, okay, and lay up a little bit," which is something I know that you don't do. And
never.
He's out there going, even in the final round, when he's up, you know, got a nice lead, and he's out there bombing driver 330 yards.
But
I mean,
but you need to play your game.
Yes.
If you start playing conservative and just take your foot off the gas, Detroit Lions, in the fourth quarter of every single game, if you start going away from your game like that, it's just a recipe for failure. Meaning, if you're even related to us, right? If I'm playing you straight up in a match and I'm up by one stroke going into the 18th hole and the 18th hole is a par 5 and I hit a good drive in the fairway and I'm 220 yards away.
You're hitting 3 wood. Yeah.
I am going to go for that green every single time because that's my game. A, we don't come here to lay up. But B, I'm not going to just change my game and try to be, I'm just going to punch it up there and play conservative and play cute, because once you get away from your game, that's when issues arise. And I think that Bryson has clearly, yeah, been changing the game, but there seems to just be people that hate the guy. And it's one thing if you want to criticize the slow play, but it seems to me that there's people who hate Bryson. And if this is true, if people are out there hating Bryson because of his work ethic and that he's putting a lot into it and that he's trying hard with all these calculations, if you're hating on a guy because of his work ethic, I'm sorry, but that's just sad.
I don't think it's that at all. I think that, I won't say the hatred is going to go away, but I do think that it'll dissipate a little bit in this sense. There's now proven results. You know, like before, he was doing all this weird stuff and he's got the protein shakes and he's in the weight room and he's, I don't even know what those shoes are that he was on at the simulator when he was practicing his swing and all of that. He hadn't won a major yet up until that point. You know, so I think people just looked at it and went, yeah, this is going to work. Sure, this guy's going to last like 2 years on the tour. You know, his body's just going to break down.
Right.
He's a major champion winner.
Not
only did he win a major, he won the U.S. Open and he won by 6 strokes.
And he's the only player under par.
100%. So I think there is now, there's some validity to what he's doing. And I do think that will, you know, respect, I think, will come with that.
It's just you got people that just don't want to believe it almost, or think that it's not sustainable, or think that he's just being an idiot out there. Nick Faldo always seems to be complaining about how these courses are going to have to start placing bunkers so that he can't just cut the corner on the trees. Like, if someone's going to do that and they're going to try to just bomb the ball and that's their game, then let them do it. And honestly, if you look at the numbers, yeah, Bryson swings out of his shoes, obviously. From a visual standpoint, when he swings out of his shoes and he's just trying to pound the ball.
He hits it almost as far as you. It's crazy.
Yeah, all right. Not quite there. But if you look at a guy like Cameron Champ or look at a guy like Matthew Wolf, they're right there. Bryson, even in drive distance, has them by like a couple yards right now in terms of leading the PGA Tour. But those guys hit it just as long as Bryson, and they're not swinging out of their shoes like he is. So that should be noted too.
Well, they're very different swings. I mean, he hits it so high in the freaking air, you know, whereas Wolf is going to hit more of a low heat-seeking missile that is just going to run, you know, and run for days. But, you know, the thing for me, I guess, I don't know, with Bryson DeChambeau is – I marvel at the fact that he was already a world-class golfer. He was already a pro. He had already won on the tour. He'd already done all of these things, right? And he was like, no, this isn't good enough. I don't think it's going to work by just doing that and sticking, you know, with that path. I can be a very good golfer for many years to come. I want to be great. Mm-hmm. I want to win majors. I want respect. How can I change my game and change my entire approach to get to that point and get to that level? The fact that he was able to do it basically within the first year of making that adjustment is simply unbelievable to me. But I have incredible respect for somebody who, say you're starting a business, right? And you know, you grow that business to $500,000 a year in revenue or $700,000 a year in revenue, right? You could have a very successful career, a very nice life. You're bringing in that kind of revenue and your business is going well. No, there are other people who will say, hey, why bring in $500,000 to the business when you can be bringing in $3 million mm-hmm. and $5 million and really grow and continue sure. to get better? I think that's awesome what Bryson
makes. It's what makes you great. And I think that Bryson has totally made drastic changes to his game. You look at the before after swings, you look at the before after pictures of him.
He has a dad pouch now. He's got a dad pouch like me. It's crazy.
Well, it's a totally different player. And I do respect what he's done. I think that people want to make fun of him and make fun of him because he's a quirky guy and he's out on the range that long. And, you know, he changed the grips on his club and every club's the same length. And, you know, his swing looks a little funny with how he holds the club with his shoulders and whatnot. But I don't know. He's been playing so well that it's something where you can't just – I don't understand the hate for the guy. The only thing that I guess I can understand is when people want to complain about his slow play. Okay, I get it. You know, I don't like slow play either. But it also is I think it's good for the game of golf, Kyle, and I really do. I think that having a polarizing figure like this on tour is what golf needs. And also, just a completely side note, is we're on the Metro Detroit Golfers podcast. How great is it that he won the Rocket Mortgage? And you know he'll be back here next year. He was actually in town a couple weeks ago at the, you know, Rocket Mortgage Pro-Am type thing they were doing. But I think that's all great.
You know what part of it is? I think for all the people out there, and I was one of them growing up, okay, you're sitting in math class, right? And your teacher is going, you need to show your work here, okay? And you're sitting there as a young kid going, well, when am I ever going to use this? You know, I don't need this, man. I have a calculator. You know, I'm not going to be doing this when I'm, you know, I have a full-time job someday. Bryson is taking that and going, I'm going to use math to be good at golf. Instead of just going out there and swinging freely and naturally and just working on your swing and
swinging
doing these
through the golf ball.
Yeah, exactly. Through and up through the golf ball, right? He's literally using numbers and data. And I do think there's a lot of people out there that go, why are you overcomplicating the game? Just go out there
and he never
play.
Turns it off. Every single shot is broken down to the tee. And there, I mean, his caddy literally pulled out a compass the other day to measure the wind or something. It is ridiculous. And he knows, and he has said that he puts a lot of pressure on his staff and his caddy and whatnot. And by the way, I thought that was a really cool moment after the round when he saw his parents. That was very emotional and cool and humanized him for sure. But no, he has totally changed it with the math and the just obsession of breaking down every single shot to the exact number.
Well, and speaking of numbers, you know, guys, look, interest rates are at an unbelievable low right now. What a transition, right?
We're gonna
go
about
right
that?
Into talking about our presenting sponsor and partners, Hall Financial. Sully and I have been working with D. Hall and his team for many, many years now. We're excited to continue that partnership. And Hall Financial has actually created a specific page for Metro Detroit golfers. Okay, so if you go to your browser, you pull it up on your phone, whatever it might be, you go to HallMDG.com, okay? HallMDG.com. One, you're going to see a ridiculous video of Sully and I talking about golf. But two, you're potentially going to be able to sign up and get an unbelievable rate and kind of find out a little bit more about what Hall Financial does, whether you're looking to refinance or potentially purchase a home.
That's the biggest thing. And I would just encourage people to, at the very minimum, just go look at the website. We got a report just last week, actually, that there's been a good number of people who have gone on the website to check it out, right? So at the very least, just go online and see that website, that video of us at Oakland Hills, and you can fill out the form, get some more information, whether you're refinancing, whether you're buying a home. Go on there, check it out, and they are trying to help Metro Detroit golfers specifically. That's www.hallmdg.com, HallMDG.com. All right, well, Metro Detroit Golfers Podcast continues, episode 4, and I'll tell you what, you know, this time it's awesome to be joined by longtime PGA Tour player, Champions Tour current player, and Lake Orion native, love it, Mr. Tom Gillis. Tom, how are you?
Good, man.
We keep being joined on these podcasts by guys who just could go out there with one arm and fire a better score than me. It's very frustrating. It is.
Well, that's what my son sitting here, Trevor, says. Every time we're out there and I hit one an 8-iron close, he's like, that's just not fair. How does that happen? There's been a little groundwork, but
that's a perfect place to start because we were talking to him before we just started recording here. And I know that you had your first ever Albatross, right? A couple weeks ago. Yeah. You were playing with Ricky Fowler down at, I believe it was Michael Jordan's new course, right? In Florida?
Yeah, the girl. Yeah.
And there was a little issue after the round with you and your son wouldn't talk to you for 3 hours. Why don't you tell the story of what would happen?
Well, they were going to play 36. You know, this time of year is not a lot of people down here. So Ricky was playing with one of the assistants there, and his cousin was my teammate in college, roommate. So we were all playing, and I could only play teams. I had to get back to the house. I was leaving the next day to head off to South Dakota. So Trevor, my son, who's ninth grader, he wanted to play. So I'm like, well, then we'll go back to where we play out of and we'll play in the afternoon. So I was telling Ricky, I go, man, I'd love to play more. You know, I got to get my son. And Ricky's like, just go get him, drive down, bring him back, have somebody drop him off. He can hang with us and play with us. And, you know, he just started, you know, raw. Hits it good when he hits it. But, you know, we have to look a lot for balls. So I go, he's ready for that. And Ricky's so easy going. He's like, who cares, man? We got the place to ourselves. You know, he's a member there and the assistant's there. We can do what we want. But anyhow, I got. So I decided not to. I figured it was just me and his time together that afternoon. I got back and told him he wouldn't talk to me for like 3 hours.
Could it play? What a moment. Come on, Tom. Be a good father and let him play with Ricky Fowler. Come on.
Yeah, he was like, I go, listen, well, don't worry. I know Rick fairly well. It's not a big deal. I go, the fact that he offers is what's important.
See, if I were your son, I wouldn't let go of that until it's on the schedule. The date, the time, when is it going to happen again?
No,
and then I'll talk to you again, you know?
I know. But I go, don't worry. I got his phone number. You know, I said he's a generous guy. If I call him, he'd probably do it tomorrow or the assistant. So he goes, we got to play with Ricky. So he's the light.
That's great. Well, Tom, obviously we want to dive into certainly talk a little bit about your career and whatnot, but I have to start by just asking you, obviously you're on the Metro Detroit Golfers Podcast. So yeah. talk about growing up Lake Orion. I know you're an Indian Wood guy. We were chatting a little before the broadcast started about that, but kind of fill the people in that might not know about being from Lake Orion, playing Indian Wood and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, I grew up a mile from there and some kids in the neighborhood about the same age, a couple kids were a little older. They were going to go up and caddy. And it was back when Indy would have a caddy program. So my mom and dad played a little bit of golf. And so they introduced me probably when I was 11 or 12. Didn't have a whole lot of interest. And then started caddying around probably 13, 14. And, you know, we could play on Mondays. And I was playing with my friends. And then I just got hooked, you know. And then I worked there all through college and everything. And like I said, I lived a mile away. And the Aldridges, Mr. Yep. and Dave Zink, Ed Bro, they just kind of I just had a knack for it. It came natural, and they just let me, they just turned me loose, let me do what I want. They were great.
Real quick, I got to jump in here because you need to settle a minor debate that we constantly have, okay? Because Indian Wood isn't just one course. It's two courses. The old course. There's a new course. I am actually partial to the new course. I love that you have to hit every shot. It's more placement golf, but it's not too difficult of placement golf. Where do you stand on this? Because Sully loves to use the word that the old course is classic, which it is. It's a beautiful course. But do you have a preference at this point?
Well, if I had to pick between the two, I would obviously play the old. I mean,
yeah, see, Kyle? Come on. Now the debate is put to bed.
All right.
500 and, you know, I mean, it's just...
Two guys from Lake Orion. This is unfair.
I like the move, too. Don't get me wrong. Like I said before we went on, I spent a lot of time over there practicing on my game because the old was busier. People want to play the old. And so I spent a lot of time over there on that new course on those back holes, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 over there just by myself. And man, it was like having a couple hundred acres of yourself, your own backyard. It was sweet. But I have a fun memory for the new as well, but I would, if I had to choose, I'd probably jump on the old just because you don't see that.
Well, Tom, if I had to ask you too, because obviously you've played everywhere and you've played all over the world, but besides Indian Wood, of course, that's your home course, as you just mentioned, what would be some other courses locally in Metro Detroit that you would point to? Courses that I'm not even just talking about it's Oakland Hills or it's Warwick Hills, even, but what are some other local courses that you enjoy around Metro Detroit?
Well, I do enjoy Warwick. I only go up there about once a year and play with Tim Vanvelt. It's really, I just enjoy it because most of the time I've ever played it, you're not really enjoying it. You're working, you know, you got a bunch of them seeing a long time and you're torn a little bit. So to go up there, I really enjoy it. I realize how good a golf course it is. And I like tree line golf course. But I have a fondness for Franklin Hills. I thought the new Meadowbrook design, it was raw when I played it, but it was unique. I thought that was cool. I thought that was neat. Oakland Hills is always a beast, the South. You know, I don't know if I wouldn't say I always get excited to go over there.
We had Steve Brady on our first podcast, actually, talking about all the renovations to the South. Going to play 7,700 yards. You know, number 9 is going to be 275-yard par 3. It'll be crazy.
Yeah. It's just a big venue. When I think of big-time tournament golf, I think of Oakland Hills. When I think of somewhere I'd want to, like, probably fall in love with, play every day, it'd be kind of like, I'm more like an Indian Wood or Franklin. Even I love playing Pine Lake, one of my favorite places to play, because it doesn't beat you up, but it's fun. But again, I have a fondness for the trees. I like the tree lines and definition.
You've had a chance to play, you know, in a handful of majors, quite a few majors. Actually, I guess, you know, staying on that point, we talk about difficulty in golf. You know, we're just coming off the U.S. Open where Winged Foot was basically trying to make it as hard as humanly possible for these guys. What is the biggest difference in your mind? And I guess how much do you like it or hate it playing a major and playing a regular tournament?
Well, the major isn't going to be fun. It's just I think I've played, I don't know, 6 or 8 of them. Can't remember. Atlanta Athletic Club and the PGA was kind of fun because it was PGA. It was the only PGA I ever played. If you played well, you could get after it. Where the U.S. Opens that I played, there was no getting after it. It's going to be a beat down from the start to finish. The first one I played at Bethpage, I think I was 27 over, and I remember sitting in the airport, and I just felt like I'd played like 4 tournaments in a row and played every day. I was like, and I didn't even finish last. I finished, I don't know, like 50th or something, I think. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm 27 over. Fuck.
Do you laugh? Because, like, the average golfer, we're watching on TV and we're watching all this, you know, transpire. And, you know, people were kind of getting on Danny Lee. I don't know if you saw his 6-putt from 4 feet or whatever, like the third round. And people are like, oh, that's just, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't let your frustration. How do you not let your frustration get to you? You're a world-class golfer, and this course is just, it's chewing you up and spitting you out.
Yeah, I just responded to his tweet because he came out with this big apology. And I'm like, I would never apologize on the worldwide stage for that. You know, like I was saying, all you got to, hey, some weeks, you know, like one of my better friends on the PGA Tour is Carl Peterson. And he's kind of in that 42 to 50. That's why you don't see him right now. He's in that gray area. But he won 5 times. But I used to play every Tuesday with him. He had the greatest line ever. He goes, some weeks you can take the punches, and some weeks you can't. And he couldn't take any more punches. Nope. He didn't do anything drastically wrong. He walked off. I guarantee he didn't feel good about it. I guarantee he'd probably never do it again.
Yeah.
I apologize. And I'm like, you're an athlete. You got caught up in the moment. It's over. Don't apologize. You know, it is what it is. It's a beat down.
Now, well, Tom, you've had such an awesome career, and I think that, you know, one thing I'd be interested to ask you about is just if you could, in general terms, I mean, how damn tough is it just to keep your tour card, to be on tour? I mean, I remember watching you over the years, even at the, you know, of course, the 2015 John Deere with Jordan Spieth and the playoff that you had. And you know, I think especially with us talking to a guy like Donnie Trosper a few weeks ago, it really is interesting to hear your perspective on just how difficult, if you could explain to the average person, is it to be on tour to maintain that? It just seems remarkably tough.
I think in the beginning, like the first 5-6 years out of college, for me, not getting there and you're meeting people, they're just kind of like you're a mini tour player and all that. It was kind of, I wouldn't say it was frowned upon, but it just didn't feel that was a challenge to get over that, to tell yourself every day, listen, I'm good. I'm going to get my chance. I'm trying to get better every day. That was a challenge. For me, it took me 12 years before I got my tour card. You know, 12 years as a pro. I got to the European tour in about my 8th year, I think. I was there for 5 years. But before that, it was the stuff Donnie Trosper was doing, you know, all the small stuff. And to make yourself feel good during those times, and the learning curve for me took a long time. I played my better golf in my 40s. Some kids do it at 22 to 26, and you don't see them. You know, it's very tough. And I would say the difference between there, the tour, it doesn't end when you get to the tour. You tell yourself you just want one shot, just like any athlete, any baseball player. I just want one shot. I just want 1 year. Well, after you get up there, all you think about from the first tournament out in that first year is like, because they're giving you courtesy cards, there's meals free. This is a way different ballgame. And you're like, immediately you get all the candy. And you're like, I want that to keep coming. So the pressure is to stay in the 125. And then if you knock that out early, you're great. But if that carries on to the end of the year, it's not a lot of sleep.
Would you equate, you know, trying to get on the tour and consistently make it? Like when we talked to Donnie a few weeks ago, a Monday qualifier, he went out and shot a 62. And when he was talking about that, the only thing I could think about was, man, imagine being the kid that went out there and shot the 63. You shoot a 63 at a Monday qualifier, and you still don't get into the tournament. You have to be perfect, essentially, to get onto the tour, and it has to all come together at the right time. That has to be maddening for somebody trying to make it.
It's so deep now. See, I didn't have those issues. We weren't shooting those scores. These kids are stronger. You know, that's a whole nother show. They're better athletes than they were when we were out. They trained. We never trained, you know. So now the depth is so deep and the line is so I feel for these kids. I really do. I'm glad I came out when I did. I'm like, ooh, I don't know how long I've been doing this. In other words, you see those tweets by different caddies and they say funny things like, stay in school, don't be in a hurry, you know, because I didn't have a degree. I was either that or was a club pro, which was fine back then. I would have been happy to be a club pro. But now it's just, you need to get a degree, but you need to have something to fall back on because the line is just so small.
Well, and Kyle, you just talked about Donnie Trosper shooting a 62 as Tom's sitting here with a hat on that says, no one cares what you shot. Yeah. I believe it says. Tom, I got to ask you about the hat because I think a lot of people love bragging about what they shot. But tell us about the hat.
Well, this hat's really for just being around the golf business my whole life. This hat is really for assistant pros, PGA Tour, well, not PGA Tour, any tour pro golfer that's playing for any bit of money. And club pros and assistant pros, because the assistant pros and the head pros got, you know, everybody comes in the shop. I used to see it all the time in anyone. Dave Zink could do it better than anybody I ever seen. Somebody walk out, we go back in the back office, and I go, how do you do that? One guy came in one time, it was like the 10th of January. We had this crazy warm weather like 8-10 years ago. And he came in and he goes, man, I 3-putt 4. I missed 5 green just by and I nubbed it. And I'm looking at Zink and I'm thinking, it's January 10th. The lights aren't even on in the pro shop. The guy's breaking his round now. When this hat came out, I immediately thought of Zink and just the whole club pro atmosphere. And then the tour pros, because you don't ever do that when you go and everybody's face. I mean, you're friends with everybody, but you're not going to sit there and unload your buddy at line. I did this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what it's about. It can throw you off a little bit, especially when I was thinking, I shouldn't wear it because of the MDG, but because some of those posts are cool. People talk about their hole-in-ones and all that. I like it. I look at it every day.
Well, Tom, let me ask you this then, too, because I know that you're very, very against slow play, right, in golf. What is more ridiculous in your opinion? Is it slow play or is it the Detroit Lions football team?
Oh, it's got to be the Lions. Yeah, that's
as I see your Legends of Detroit, Barry Sanders picture in the background, I know you're very outspoken on Twitter about the Lions, and I don't know if you're in the camp that just kind of laughs and says, "Hi, you know, this is just same old Lions," or if you are like, "This is a joke."
No, we don't get mad on Sundays. That's long gone. I mean, for us, it's more of a comical. Like when they were up the other day, you know, I said to Trevor, my son, I go, "Here we go. Here comes another one."
Right.
And he's like, "Why are we fans?" And I go, "Listen, dude, I go, it's not easy to be a Lions fan. You got to be tough. Anybody can be a Seahawks fan." I go, "You got to be tough." I go, "Sometimes you got to loosen the reins on so you can actually deal with it." But no, I'm just a fan when I tweet on that. You know, I probably get a little more traction because of what I do for a living, but I'm watching as a fan.
Oh, yeah.
As frustrated as they are, to be honest with you. And we've got skin in the game all these years, you know.
Totally.
Well, yeah. It amazes me that people still can get so mad on a Sunday.
Yeah.
I just don't.
I think it's the younger age. I think as you get to a certain age, the dead ends. You just like, whatever, we've seen it forever.
You got better stuff going on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and Tom, just on that topic of slow play, I know this is something that we're talking about during the opening segment of this current podcast right now, but obviously Bryson DeChambeau and people talking about his slow play and talking about how he's changed the game and everything. What's your two cents on Bryson, what he's been doing, and certainly that topic of slow play?
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to take your hat off to him. The guy's a hell of a player. You can't argue that. The slow play part, like I watched the whole last round Sunday off and on, and I shouldn't say I watched the whole thing, but I watched a lot of it after the Lions were completely doing what they usually do. And it was slow. I mean, he was in that book a long time. And that, you know, they're in the last group. I get it. It is the U.S. Open. I get all that. There's the part of that I get. But, man, it just – I worry about the viewers. You know what I mean? I'm going to watch no matter what. But what about the viewers? Or does that get boring? Do they lose their attention? Are they going to the football? You know what I'm saying? But I think as far as what he's done, it's unbelievable. I think he's learning every day, not just about playing golf better, but how to be a better person. I don't think he leaves any stone unturned. My hat's off to him. And he has changed everything right now. And I'm telling you what, Augustus, they're probably adding bunkers out there right now. We don't even know.
What do you do, Tom, if you're on tour and you're playing with a guy that's playing super slow? I'm sure you have plenty of times. What do you do? Because Brooks Koepka's talked before about how he'll intentionally slow down himself. Yeah. So then you get put on the clock. What do you do?
That's what you got to do. You got to go into four corners, I like to call it. I remember one year I was playing in San Diego. I came in and I was playing with a guy that was really slow, and I was eating with Brant Snedeker, and he's fast. I'm like, he goes, "How'd you do yesterday?" I said, "I had one over or whatever, Torrey Pines. I don't even know what course." And I said, "It's not all bad playing. I'm playing with so-and-so." And he's like, "Phew." He goes, "That's pretty good." He goes, "I don't know what to do." I go, "I'm just not happy." And he goes, "You got to do it." He goes, "I've done it to this guy twice, and I've cost him about 40 grand because he's almost over the limit." He goes, "Just put it right into four corners and shut it down." He goes, "About two holes in, the police will be there. And then you're back on." And that's exactly what I did. And I saw him after. I go, "Worked great. You played great after that. You got another bad time. He's this far away from $20,000 fine or whatever." You know?
So what's that
stuff you don't read about?
Put it in four corners. What do you mean
slow
exactly?
Down. Just completely go slow down. Just completely slow down and just take. And the guy I was playing with, I don't want to mention his name, but he came up to me like on the third green and he goes, "I know what you're doing." And I said, "Well, then you probably should speed up because you know the police is coming, because I'm not going to stop."
Is this guy a name that we would recognize?
No, he's gone now. But, you know, to me, here's how I look at slow play from a professional standpoint. I've said it 100 times before. Let's say I play fast, so the guy I'm playing with is really slow. He's taking extra time because there's a time bar. You know, we're supposed to be on a certain time. So you get down there. Now what if I need some help, or I hit it in a hazard, or I need a ruling? Well, I don't have any time because this guy's been stealing my time from the first hole on. So to me, I look at it as like somebody taking something from me. So I have a real problem with it. I just don't think it's right. I think it's totally not part of the game, and it's just an etiquette thing. It'd be like somebody spelling or really, really, really spelling watching the U.S. Open tennis. Well, the bouncers are going to talk about it. They're going to get shamed out of it. They won't keep doing that. I don't think we do a good enough job of that.
Well, it's interesting we talk about this. Is there anything else? Because we've gotten some opinions on, you know, how to change the game of golf, things that are evolving too much, perhaps. Is there something you're passionate about that you think maybe golf needs to look at potentially about changing here moving forward?
Well, I think some of these designers need, you know, like, yeah, I was just watching Tiger's Payne's Valley thing.
So were we, yeah.
And that, see, I saw that when we were there a couple weeks ago. We played up at Buffalo Ridge above it. So you could see the golf course, you know, and it was big fairways. But I'm thinking, I go, this is resort style golf. They're trying to get people. And by the way, that's a heck of a place if you guys ever want to go do something fun. But okay. Back to what you were saying, I think widening the fairways, you know, sometimes they put these bunkers in places. When I look at it, I'm like, how's a 15 handicapper enjoy that?
I'll tell you, I love it.
A little bit of that. But like Oakland Hills, you're not going to do that. But I mean, these resorts that were, you know, I played Drink Jones down there in Alabama one time. And I remember we played first hole in the practice round, me and Carl Peterson, George McNeil, and Jason Bowen. We hit off the first hole. We're going up to the green, it's a par four, and there's a bunker. It must have been 30 yards wide, 30 yards short of the green, just in the rough, and it must have been 15 foot deep. And I'm like, what? I stopped everybody. I go, what is this doing? What about Bob and Sally that drive from Redford? They drive down there, they're all fired up, they get out of the car. She hits a great little drive down the fairway. She hits a nice three wood right in this bunker. You know, I mean, yeah. Stuff like that just sends me over the edge. I'm like, there's no reason for that.
Yeah, no, totally.
Some of that.
Well, Tom, I do have to ask you this, too, and I hate to put you on the spot with kind of a general question, I guess, but I don't know if you could, in my opinion, really beat the story you told earlier about Ricky Fowler and your son and how great of a story that is. But is there any certain story or certain memory, a certain round over the years that really sticks out to you in terms of just something you think our audience would find interesting? I'm talking about a funny story on tour or I'm sure you have these select moments that have just stuck out over the years on tour more than anything.
There's a couple, I would say, from a perspective standpoint, to get a feeling what a player is trying to do to get to the tour, a mini tour player, whatever you want to call this round of the PGA Tour qualifying. And we'd already been there, played five rounds. I was right in the middle of it to get my car, and it was at PGA West. And I remember driving there on the last round thinking, this is it right here. I mean, today dictates, this is the closest we're ever going to get. I mean, I just couldn't believe it was here. You know what I mean? And I had this overwhelming feeling of calm, even though when it was over, it wasn't that calm. But I think I was surprised that the moment was there. And I thought everything you've done in 12 years already, 5 years playing in Europe, met all these great people. Does it really come down to this? And so part of me, I was like, it was just all this self-talk going on, you know, let's get perspective and all that. And I think people really want to know what that feels like. And when you, in all those, you know, that's the course that has the island green at the end, and there's nothing but water all the way in there. They play the Bob Hope there now. And I mean, you drop a fork for the next 2 weeks and you're like that, your nerves would get shot. Overcoming that and getting a tour card for the first time was a big, big hurdle.
Once I can't imagine.
That was that one thing you say, I just want my chance. But I thought all the pressure was gone. It just started up about 6 weeks later and just kept going again.
It had to be one of those things too, you know, for you specifically. You said you played, you know, overseas and all that. And I think you've played, what, 20 plus countries, you know, all over the world. Being able to travel the entire world doing something that you love, that's got to be an unbelievable feeling to reflect on and look back on now.
Yeah, I think I've been lucky. You know, I was given God-given talent, and then I did something with it. You know, it was a perfect environment growing up a mile from Indian Wood. It came easy to me immediately. I played other sports. I was okay. I was a decent basketball player, not a great baseball player. Decent, but nothing. You know, I could play. I could make the teams, but I wasn't. Golf came easy like that. Like, I didn't miss the center of face a whole lot early on. About a year of doing it, it became natural. So I feel blessed that being able to do that and travel 30 countries and just see, just meet the people. I think that's what I mean a little bit on the Champions Tour is it's not as important as it was all those years, old 9 years on tour, 8 or 9 years, 5 in Europe. It was really big to keep moving and keep better. Keep improving. And I wouldn't have been able to do it if I didn't have help. There's a guy at Red Run Crunch Club, Jerry McWilliams, is still there. He's probably 94 right now. I mean, he backed me and we had a deal, and there's no way I would have. There's probably, I mean, I might have made it, but at that time, he was the only guy willing to help. So we had a long partnership. He's a great man. I had a lot of good breaks too.
And Tom, just in closing here, you know, is golf, because you've played it so much over the years, it's been your career, is it something that you still just love over all these years? What I mean by that,
it is your job, but in your free time, do you still enjoy going out and playing golf, like you said, with Ricky or whoever? Is that something that work is golf, but also you still will do it for fun in your spare time?
Yeah, well, with Trevor coming along, that's yep. me out there. It's turned into a job, I would say, for the most part. I wouldn't say that. I would rather fish, probably, or do something else, or just watch. Yeah, I'm pretty chill like that. But there's some of it still. You know, what's fun to me is the tournament golf side of it, the competition, and then getting – it's still one of the funnest things is to get prepared before you go on the road to play. So the week leading up, you're practicing, and you're preparing, and you're constantly thinking, and you're working out in the gym 3 days a week. And at this stage, you're trying to stay loose. It's rough. And you just can't do as much after the round as you used to be able to do. Like, let's say you didn't hit it that good in the round and the tournament round. You're like, I'm going to go play. What Bryson did the other night, to me, that's just amazing that he can sit out there. And Dustin will do it, too, and pound those balls for 2 hours because I'd be in traction the next day. And I'd like to because I want to go work. It's a big, you know, it's stimulating to me because you're never going to perfect it. So I'm going to keep trying to work on it, how to. It never ends in golf. You're always trying. Doesn't matter if you're 12 handicap, 5, 30 handicap, Kyle. It doesn't matter.
Let's be honest.
You're picking up on it now.
Just like him. And plus, let's be honest. It has to be fun being on a Champions Tour with John Daly as well. That guy seems like he'd just be awesome to play with.
No, he's funny. I go over to his bus once in a while. He's always cooking meals. He always sends me a text, come on over. You know, the problem with that tour is you can have too much fun. You know,
yeah.
Rich, he'd be a good guest, too. Rich Beam's funny. His first week out, I saw him. He was in Branson, you know, there. And I go, man, how you doing, Beamer? And his face is all red. He was hot out. He hasn't played much golf. He goes, this tour, it's too easy. He goes, you play between 10 and noon every day. He goes, I've had social cocktails all week.
That's great. I love that.
That's a big challenge.
And it's also, you know, Tom, because you broke this story a couple years ago, we know that you actually do tip your caddies well, unlike Matt Kuchar, right? So are you going to be getting into any more breaking news, investigative journalism after your career ends or what?
I don't think so. I mean, that Kuchar thing took a lot of that was enough for me. You know, I had to okay before we even did it. I had to okay with my wife Jenny. I go, she's like, "Do you really have to do this?" And I'm like, "I haven't been able to sleep in 2 nights." I said, "I'm out of the caddy here." I go, "This just irks me in the way." And so, anyhow, there was a lot of energy fighting it, and I don't think I'd do it again. It's fun while it lasted, and the kids got paid, and everything was all good his way, and I'm sure he's doing all right. It's over, but I wouldn't get in there again. I'd rather battle, and I like tagging Rod Wood, you know, the Lions and those guys.
Yeah, there you go. I
like those guys because they, you know, they're really making some dough too. And I don't know, I just get frustrated with the Lions. Dave Burkett's got to be tired of me. He never responds to my tweets. I don't blame him.
we'll tell Dave he's got to. I got to hit you back now.
I like sure. him.
Yeah, come on. He's great. Sunday. Love Dave.
I ask him every Sunday, is Mr. Wood sitting up? You know, the general manager.
Yeah.
He never replied. Right. So, anyhow.
We'll get an answer for you, Tom. I love that.
Yeah. We're on the case.
I don't know.
Awesome.
Well, hey, you had somebody who picked on him pretty hard. Valente did there. You saw it firsthand, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, over the years, for sure.
I miss hearing him. You know, I miss hearing his kiddiness about it. I really do.
Yeah. No, but, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me.
Tom, thank you. This has been awesome, and we really appreciate your time and have enjoyed, you know, our friendship over the years. You and I have texted for a few years now and talked and whatnot. So we'll keep talking about the Lions. We'll keep talking about golf and see where we go.
All right, guys. All the best to you.
Well, an incredible discussion with a guy who has just had so much success in the game of golf over the years, Tom Gillis. What an unbelievable conversation. You know, as Tom was joking there about, you know, he would be in traction if he was out there on the range hitting it like Bryson DeChambeau or Dustin Johnson for 2 hours getting ready for the final round of the U.S. Open. We should send Tom to our friends over at Tricovery Massage and Flexibility because they are working wonders on me. Just last week, you know, Sully, you like to joke about me playing too much golf, okay? I played Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then 2 rounds on Saturday, okay? And I'm living to tell about
it. Must be nice.
Yeah. And that's because
I'm not playing too.
Well, no, of course. And that's because of our friends Jeff and Kevin over at Tricovery doing an unbelievable job. And they're actually catering a specific program for Metro Detroit golfers just the other day I got to take a peek at what this program is going to entail. It's going to include stretching, some exercises, some things that you can do as a golfer to make sure that your body is cooperating. And I need that as much as ever. I encourage you to check out Tricovery, please. They have two locations, one in Novi, a new one even in Royal Oak. You can follow them on social media, Facebook and Instagram. You can, of course, visit the website at try-covery.com. That's try-covery.com. And right now, in the month of September, you can book a 60-minute session for just $90. Okay, that's regularly priced at $110. $20 off a session. See what it feels like for you.
Yeah, and I think they do a great job. I know that we were just talking the other day about how some MDG members have called there and got some packages that they booked. And I think a lot of golfers don't even realize that you can get this type of treatment, even, yes, for amateur golfers that just happen to play a lot of golf. Really does go a long way, so make sure you check out Tricovery, and we thank Jeff and Kevin. Their entire team just does a great job. I was in there. We mentioned a certain football team the other day, or excuse me, we mentioned a certain football team earlier on this broadcast and their struggles, but to show you how good they are, I mean, I was getting stretched the other day, and I was getting stretched in another room of several players on that football team. They are, you know, do a great job on the professional level and, of course, amateur golfers as well. They've been killing it. Tricovery's worked with a ton of pro athletes, by the way. The list has just gotten crazy. And certainly a ton of local golfers that need it.
All right, so Sully, did you see one of the bigger stories to come out of the U.S. Open this weekend, okay? No, it wasn't Phil Mickelson's photo of him having coffee on his couch, curled up in the fetal position after the U.S. Open chewed him up and spit him out. No, it wasn't that. It was Danny Lee in Saturday's third round, I believe. So he had made the cut, okay, in the U.S. Open, which I think is a feat in and of itself, especially at winged foot. And he goes out there, he stuck a shot to 4 feet, all right? Now, it was a little downhill putt. A leaker, sure, not going to be easy, but shouldn't be the hardest putt in the world, okay? He dribbles it right past, okay? So now he's got an uphill putt, okay? The comebacker, right, that I always miss, okay? Because I love to three-putt. Danny Lee misses that. He then goes over to the ball and doesn't get set up and pounds the ball. It hits the hole, and it goes down the hill again. Hits it again. A six-putt.
It's crazy.
From 4 feet, okay? And, of course, he went and he, you know, as us average golfers will do, he slammed his putter on the ground and walked off. He eventually withdrew from the tournament and has since actually apologized for, yeah, for his actions, which I think is ridiculous. What do you make of that? Because I think it's fine. I love seeing guys frustrated. Yeah, of course you're mad.
So it's relatable. I think that a lot of people, all of us have been there where you miss a putt, then you go up there and you tap it and you miss again. And they, what an average golfer like us, we're just going to scoop it up at that point.
Yeah,
but,
that's true.
But he can't do that. So instead he just keeps pounding it. And it was, I mean, you hate to see something like that because that's just someone's emotion and attitude, whatever you want to call it, getting the best of them. And that is frustrating. That's stressful. You're right there, and then you do something like that, and you just blow it within 30 seconds. That sucks. But in terms of a behavior or a golf etiquette standpoint, I'm not going to be the golf purist about it. But in terms of behavior, I mean, come on. You shouldn't be. You got to set a better example than that.
Oh, stop.
You can't just be pounding the ball past the hole like that. I mean,
Mr. Holier Than Thou.
He didn't even try. He didn't even try to make it.
He was pissed. And right, I get, like, but the amazing thing to me was...
You shouldn't just slam it past the hole like that.
No, understandable. I mean, he shouldn't have. He should have been able to finish out. But, dude, you're playing a course like that. And, you know, if you listen to the interview with Tom Gillis earlier, he talked about it. You play in a major championship, particularly the U.S. Open. It is a grind. It's not fun. You know, we talked to Steve Brady, the head golf professional over at Oakland Hills, and they're doing their, you know, restoration of the South Course to be able to get a U.S. Open. And he admitted himself, I don't know that guys necessarily like playing the South Course at Oakland Hills because it can be so challenging when they do. I get it. I have no issue. You know, you're a pro golfer, and you're being made to look a fool by this course.
Well, and we've seen frustration get the best of a guy like Phil Mickelson at the U.S. So it always happens at the U.S. Open because the course is so ridiculously tough. But I just thought it was a little excessive from that. You didn't think so?
No.
To hit to six putt from 4 feet?
I mean, he should have locked in.
Tap it in the hole. And then if you're really that frustrated, mark the ball, step up to it, you're professional, and make the putt.
Well, see, that's something where I would blame the caddy more than I would blame Danny. His caddy needs to step in and be like, whoa, dude, hold on here, Danny. Let's settle down. Yeah. just reset, okay? And let's make sure we finish this cost himself a lot of money because he inevitably withdrew as well.
It does humanize the guys. You realize that, you know, it's a situation where every single amateur golfer who's ever played the game has been there before, where you're missing putts at that length, you get in your head like that, and it's just, you hate to see something like that, but again, I realize that it does humanize you a little bit.
No joke, I just played Timber Ridge, you know, up in Lansing, okay, this past weekend, and there was a par 5 with the most unfair pin location I think I may have ever experienced in my life. It was a front-to-back sloping green, okay, and it also sloped a little bit down the hill to the left, okay? And the pin was right there in that middle part in the front. So if you were anywhere past the pin, you couldn't hit that ball more than a foot past. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it was literally rolling off the green. If you were short of the pin and you were chipping on, and I'm speaking from experience, you chip up and you don't get it far enough, it is coming 10 yards all the way back off the green. I think I took a 9. I took a quad. Because and 5 of those shots were right around the green. I get being frustrated about that. Yeah.
And those slippery putts can get you because you just have to tap. I mean, we've saw so many of those at the U.S. Open, just tapping the golf ball, not even following through, just tapping the golf ball and having it travel. I thought Bryson did an incredible job with his putts of just playing those greens well, where he was not 3-putting at all. He was still making birdies, making a ton of pars. It was remarkable.
All right, well, that's going to do it for episode 4. We appreciate Tom Gillis joining us. An incredible conversation with him, and obviously wish him the best moving forward here on the Champions Tour. Really excited about the slate of guests that we have coming up as well. We got a lot going on. Please continue to download, subscribe, share, rate, give us feedback, and you know, let's just keep this thing rolling.
And we've actually got people that have reached out offering to help with certain guests that they've known, including a very big name guest that we're about to have on. So please, guys, you know, if you know, this is your podcast as much as it is ours, right? So if you have some guest suggestions, maybe you know someone who you think would be a good fit for this podcast, make sure you reach out to myself or Kyle, obviously. And also, as I say every episode, do not forget, we have the text list. We have the text message database where we text people special updates before we even post on Facebook. I'm talking about events. I'm talking about pools, stuff like that. So that's all you have to do. Text MDG to 545454, and you'll be on the list.
Thanks for listening to the Metro Detroit Golfers Podcast. Make sure to hit that subscribe button and keep giving Sully and Bogey a hard time.
Powered by our presenting sponsor, Hall Financial, and also Tri-Covery Massage and Flexibility. We'll be right back.